Hello, and before we start this podcast, I just want to start by saying we had some technical difficulties when we were recording it. Something about the way it came off over Discord, Audacity didn't quite pick all of it up in a couple spots. So, you're going to hear this just before the audio does a little bit of a skip. And at one point, you're going to hear this, and you're going to hear me come in and say, Katra, in the middle of Jorn speaking. That's because in that sentence, we literally lost one word, but it might not be clear what Jorn was talking about, so I added in so you knew what it was. Other than that, the episode is enjoyable, I would like to think. So, enjoy!
I am Kur of the House of Lunkij, commander of the Dark Moon Fleet. With me tonight are my two co-hosts.
I am Jorn of House Vampyr, the XO of Phoenix Rising.
I am Javon of the House Dongying Shonche, CEO of the Crimson Fury.
Welcome to the Historical Record, where we will be looking at the latest episodes of Star Trek Discovery, starting with Context is for Kings, The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry, Choose Your Pain, and Lathe. So, I guess we'll start with on Twitter and Imgur and all that. I put out our quest for people to send to us what they thought of Star Trek Discovery so far, or if they had any questions. And I'm going to start with, because Peter's here is more of a comment rather than a question, where the other guys were kind of questions or theories. All right, from Peter. Nuanced, riveting, great action, compelling characters, absolutely brilliant. The best first season of Trek yet. Surprisingly, people who bothered to actually talk to me actually do like the shows. Brian said the technology Starfleet is working on sounds awfully a lot like the portal of the Iconian Empire. He made that comment back before we realized that large bug ripper was the key to all of it. You guys remember the Iconian Empire?
Oh yeah, I remember the Iconians and their doorway thing, but that was more of a portal that you walked through. That reminds me more of like a Stargate kind of thing than the spore drive is.
That's fair. But it could be how the Iconians like focus the spores, because the Iconians, it wasn't like a gateway like Stargate where there had to be a doorway on the other side. It just opened up a portal kind of anywhere as it rotated for some weird reason.
Yeah, it could be, you know, the technology behind the Iconian gateways could be based on the, you know, the spore network. But, you know, that's a huge conjecture and based on, you know, not very much information. So it could be that, but unless they tell us, I think it's unlikely.
And they both, Brian and Dan, were both curious if we think the black badges and the black alert thing is Section 31. And do we think it's the formation of Section 31?
I don't think it's the formation of Section 31, because Section 31, wasn't there Enterprise episodes that had Section 31 stuff?
Yes, and the issue with that is that the guy in Deep Space Nine, I forget his name, he said it was a clause within the Federation Charter where these guys are clearly Starfleet, but they might be the reason why there's a clause in the Federation Charter.
Yeah, and then there's the fact that the USS Discovery just happens to be NCC 1031.
See, that's way too obvious for Section 31, though. I think that's more of like a nod to Section 31. You know, the show has tons and tons and tons of Easter eggs. I was just rewatching the last episode, and in the background, you can see on Vulcan, there's the Vulcan shuttle that landed in First Contact. You know, they're throwing in lots of little Easter eggs all over the place, and I think that's more of one of those than a Discovery is a Section 31 spaceship. That just seems kind of a little bit too overt for Section 31.
But if they keep with the Section 31 angle on it, and Discovery is part of Section 31, it allows them to hide all of the adventures that we're currently watching, and Kirk and Picard and on down the line would never have seen them.
Which would also explain why they have a skeleton for the Gorn, but in the original series that said it was the first time their race came across one of those.
Well, it may have been the first time they came across a living one.
Well, then there's also the fact that Uhura had no idea what a tribble was when they first encountered them, and yet there's one purring constantly in the captain's ready room.
Right. I think there's a kind of a suggestion that while they've been trying to use the spore drive, they've kind of jumped to random places and he's been able to amass a collection of, you know, unknown things like the Tribble and the Gorn, and he's got Klingon weapons in there and other alien weapons in his one room.
Oh, yeah, that's quite obvious. I can see where that's going. I'm just saying that if it is Section 31, 31 is uber secret, then all of these things will be secreted away from the rest of the Federation when the show wraps up.
I hope they don't do that, because that would be like, you know, at the end of Enterprise going, oh, it's just a dream.
They almost kind of did that when they set the timelines fixing itself. We're still not actually sure what's in continuity from Enterprise.
Right. That was one of those things. Yeah, it would be very much a kind of an unfulfilling ending if they just went, oh, it's all Section 31. We're just going to sweep it under the rug. I think it's more likely that it's going to turn out that the Spore Drive has some unforeseen side effects that are pretty bad. It may be that it somehow, you know, warps people, or it has some connection to the mirror universe, or there's something that can go on that makes the Spore Drive, you know, impossible to continue using.
Which is blowing up the ship. It has a catastrophic failure at the end.
Right, but that would wrap up some of the stuff in sequel of it.
I think an easy explanation for the spores why they wouldn't be working in the future is that maybe the Klingons get and they come up with a way to destroy the spores so the Klingons can't use it.
Right. It may end up, you know, the season may end with them destroying the entire spore network.
That might be awfully tough, because my understanding of the way they've got this thing working is I think they're playing on dark matter and dark energy. And that's would have to do something fundamentally dangerous to the universe if they do away with the whole system.
Well, I don't know. They made it sound more like it was, you know, these plants that were interconnected in some way. You know, in the Next Generation, they said that warp drive is warping space-time and is destroying the universe, the fabric of the universe. So it wouldn't be beyond them to be like, oh, we're going to do something that poisons the spore network and makes it like unusable or kills it off in some way.
At one point in Next Generation, didn't they have to set a warp drive speed limit because they were doing something to the universe?
Yeah, it's the warp 5 limit that they put on in that one episode.
Yep.
And then they just violate it afterwards.
Only in emergencies.
Like every week.
I don't think it's every week. I know that like a couple of weeks later, there's a specific mention to it where they're like, oh, Starfleet has given us permission to exceed the warp 5 speed limit.
The last comment from Dan was just wondering if the changes in the Klingons' look was supposed to explain the disfigurations of them with the virus from Enterprise.
I don't know what's going on there with the look. At this point, I'm just kind of like, it's fine. I'm just going to accept it and move on. If they have some kind of explanation for it, if they don't, oh well. I'm kind of looking at it like video games. Video games that were made in the 90s had really bad graphics. Video games made now have really good graphics. And kind of that's the difference, is in the 90s, they really didn't have good enough technology to make Klingons look the way they do now. And now they can. So that's why everything looks better.
In the conversation we had, that's basically what I said to him, is that now the assumption is that these Klingons look like what Klingons look like Worf and the rest of them. Like, that's just how they look. And they've always looked that way.
Has anybody else noticed that the Klingon armor is different depending on what house or what group of Klingons you're looking at?
Yes.
Yeah, they've all got different fashions depending on what house they come from, which kind of makes sense.
And kind of nice, because it makes it a little bit easier to tell them apart.
For sure.
If you look at armor in the Middle Ages, they all had their own different ways of doing things. They didn't all look exactly alike, serving the same function, but we're getting individualities, different houses doing it different ways.
And it gives us options when you want to try to recreate the armor.
Some of it really looked in the last episode where they're taking the Admiral hostage, looked incredibly like leather armor.
Yeah.
Prison guard armor looked very familiar. When they came on, I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool set of armor. I wouldn't mind.
It'd be a lot easier to recreate than the very, very fancy, I always thought of as the religious armor of the first ship.
Yeah, that stuff is obviously like ceremonial, high-ranking member of a house armor.
And it also seems to double for space armor, because they're able to just put like a helmet over top of it.
Yeah, some of them, I noticed that they did that. They like had a thing they clipped on the front or kind of like, yeah, and then it went over the top.
I would not be surprised if all of the armor, even the one that looks leather, had that particular feature to it.
It would make sense. And like a race that prides themselves for being warriors, to kind of wear uniforms or battle armor that would be able to withstand space battles, so that they would have to do is snap on a helmet and they could go.
I think that was more like the torch bearer armor. That was more of a pressure suit. I think the stuff that they had on, because when he was walking around, I thought it was really cool when they boarded the ship to take the engine part. I think that Yeah, they dropped that big box on the floor and hit a button, and it produced atmosphere. And then they were able to take it off, and that was, I thought, was a very nifty little thing.
And the fact that they shot that sequence mostly upside down and righted itself, because if I recall, the Shinzu bridge was on the bottom, wasn't it?
Right. At first, he's walking along the ceiling in the bridge upside down, and they shot it from his point of view. But then when he goes into the ready room, I think he's the right way up.
Yeah, I think I know what shot you're talking about. When they go to get the warp core or whatever.
Dialects that have specific sounds that have shifted in specific ways. Carl just tends to, he's saying stuff the normal way, it just a few of the words tend to slur a little bit together. There's been a few times where he said something and I've listened to it like a couple of times. I'd be like, oh, okay, I get it. But he's pronouncing it when I would expect it to be like y-roll, more of a gap where y-roll, he's got something else in there. The sound doesn't quite, I guess it's difficult to explain.
I kind of get what you're saying.
It may also be a side effect of the hologram technology, because we've seen a lot of him talking through the hologram and not as himself.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
So what do you guys think of Mudd?
He's actually, the actor's pretty good. He was on The Office, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was pretty funny.
And he's supposed to be back in the next episode this week.
He's, according to the one movie site, he's contracted for 15 episodes.
Isn't there only 15 episodes in the season?
I think they just said he's in it for the whole season.
Some of the earlier ones that I saw before that one had him at most all the episodes, at least a whole lot more than you had Sarek in.
Yeah, and he's only been in one so far. Well, Mudd's only been in one so far. Sarek, he's been in nearly every episode. Even it may be in flashbacks, but still.
Well, what did you think of his description, his feelings for Stella in this episode versus what we saw in I'm Mudd in the original series?
I think he is a con man, so I don't believe anything he says at all.
Yeah, that's the problem with Mudd, is you don't know what to believe.
So Captain Lorica doesn't have to worry about Mudd coming after him.
Well, clearly that's not the case if he's supposed to be in the next episode. I wonder if he's going to be in it because maybe he'll go, like, free Mudd.
Maybe. Well, for that to be true, he would have had to have been involved in this. Because originally it was going to be Sarek. The Klingons even said, we were expecting Sarek, not her. So if it was a setup, no one had any way to communicate the change to the Klingons.
But by the same token, when Sarek couldn't go, when it became obvious that there was no way he was going to go, and they knew it was going to see a couple of houses of the Klingon, wouldn't most organizations put the screeching brakes on at that point?
Well, his mission seemed to be like it was on the down low anyways.
Yeah, I think it was it was set up, it was a trap to catch Sarek and then try to use him to gain some kind of get some deal out of it. But the Klingons seemed very surprised that it was at the Admiral. So, I think he chose not to go rescue her because he wanted her out of the picture kind of thing. But I don't think he knew it was a setup to begin with.
Okay, so moving right along. In these episodes, I noticed a couple of things that had been drawn from the Star Trek fan films in these episodes. One was the shots on Vulcan, where Sarek was. I saw those in the trailers for Star Trek Axanar. And secondly, Kirk's nephew. Kirk's nephew was gay in Star Trek Phase 2. So when the doctor and the engineer hit it off, that didn't seem to be as shocking to me as I think it was supposed to be.
Wait, are one of those guys supposed to be Kirk's nephew?
No, in Star Trek Phase 2. Peter Kirk was assigned to the Enterprise.
Okay, but are from Discovery supposed to be Kirk's nephew?
No. Nobody is Kirk's nephew. It's that the engineer and the doctor are an item in that show.
Yeah, I remember that.
What? How is that connected to Continues, though? I don't understand.
Phase 2, not Continues.
Oh, Phase 2, okay. I don't watch a lot of those fan things that just try to copy the original series.
Well, were they recreating the shot or something?
They're recreating the idea. We had not had a couple in Star Trek until Phase 2, and then now here on Discovery.
That doesn't mean they're necessarily borrowing it from Phase 2. However, speaking of that scene, that clip at the end where they zoom in on where you realize he walks away and his reflection's still in the mirror, that was creepy.
Yeah, I think that's a whole mirror universe thing, is they're suggesting that the spores somehow or another is changing him or making him different. He's already very different.
Making him nicer.
Yeah, well, he seems to be, like, he's turning into a hippie is kind of the only way I can really describe
him. Yeah, that's very much the case, I think. But the other interpretation on that is, because they're doing something to his mind, you know, psychedelically, I need to see another scene between him and the doctor to verify they actually have a relationship versus the engineer wanting and therefore imagining that there's a relationship. I'm just saying there's multiple ways of reading that mirror sequence.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. I didn't even think about that.
Like, the guy in the mirror was the real one and what we saw was his imagination.
Correct.
I think there's the scene on the bridge that seems to somehow connected to that scene. And it would seem very odd for him to imagine them having that discussion, I guess. And that they announced in all their materials that those two are a couple. So
now we're going on pre-knowledge.
Well, it's all meta-knowledge, man. No one saw the mirror except for us.
So did you guys go back and watch the Enterprise incident?
Yeah, I've seen it in past, yeah.
At the end of the last historical record, we were trying to figure out the whole cloaking device issue, and we were each going to kind of go off on our own and try to figure out if the first appearance of the cloaking device was actually in the Enterprise incident.
No, the first time you ran into the Romulans, they were cloaked. Balance of Terror, I believe, is the name of the episode.
Which is true. It's just in that when we were talking about, we thought the name of it was the Enterprise incident. Basically, I went back and I watched like 6 episodes of Star Trek to try to track the history of the cloaking device. And in the Balance of Terror, they do actually say this was the first time they saw something like this. But ultimately, through just tracking different episodes where they talk about the history of the cloaking device vaguely, what it really comes down to is they ran to the Romulans before in Minefield and Enterprise, where they ran to ships and minefield that were all cloaked. So them saying that in the original series is not really a true statement.
It may also have been them talking about themselves personally. This is the first time we've come across this. Maybe we being the Enterprise crew, as opposed to we being
I would have to go back and watch it, but I'm pretty sure they make it sound like it's the first time anybody saw something like that. But they also refer to it as an invisibility screen opposed to cloaking.
First time we're exposed to just about any technology on Star Trek, you're going to find the name is probably going to change down the line when they get it introduced and chiseled into canon.
Yeah, the original series is famous for naming stuff like 15 different ways.
Oh yeah, during the last episode, because of that at Balance of Terror, we were wondering if they could have had a cloaking device in Discovery 10 years before that. And basically, Enterprise contradicts the statements that Spock and Kirk made in the original series, where they said they've never seen anything like invisibility screen before. But one of the biggest difference of the invisibility screen that's featured in the Balance of Terror is that the ship can't do more than warp because of the power that requires. So that could be something that plays in Discovery.
Oh, you mean that's like the invisibility screen is different from a regular cloaking device?
Yeah, or they might address the power consumption thing. That was also a big issue in the Enterprise incidents as well. The Romulans' energy, the way they draw energy to that weapon was burning out their ship, and the Balance of Terror seemed like they had the same issue.
So maybe the cloaking device or the Klingon cloaking device in Discovery would only be usable when you're not at warp or something like that.
Yeah.
Remember, too, the Klingon cloaking device currently is being held by one house. Now, granted, another house has hijacked it, but it may be kept internally to the house. And if something happens to the house, then the Klingon Empire loses the cloaking device until they get it. Till they re-get it from the Romulans.
I was just going to say that through watching all those episodes, there's no indication that the Klingons actually got their cloaking device from the Romulans. And I looked it up on Memory Alpha, and the best I could figure out is that it's implied that they may have, but I don't think it's ever been outright stated that they did.
I think part of that comes from Star Trek 3 originally was going to have Krug stealing a Romulan bird of prey with a cloaking device and all that kind of stuff. And then that slowly evolved into a Klingon ship with a cloaking device and all that kind of stuff. So,
yes, originally that scene was supposed to feature D7s, I think, and he was supposed to uncloak and destroy all of them as in his opening scene, but they cut all that.
So the Klingons may not have a cloaking device by the time Kirk era comes around. Who knows? They may lose it.
Yeah, or they just never got it from the Romulans to begin from. Or maybe the Romulans got a better one from the Klingons. Got the ships from them, too.
Remember, they've got one now on the ship that the guy took from the other one. But we don't know what's going to happen with that device. Because right now, it's only on the one ship.
At the end of the last episode, though, Cole makes it sound like he's putting the cloaking device technology in other ships. Because he said, now House... whatever the house was, Mokai, maybe, it, join our united Klingon Empire and have the cloaking device installed in.
Yeah, it sounds like he's been able to replicate it. So, which might imply that might be a newer technology that maybe they have the specs for in the ship or something, or maybe it's so old that it's easy to replicate. But we talked about in the last episode, and I just backtracked several episodes of Enterprise, the original series, and episode of Next Generation. If they're when the cloaking device seemed to appear,
it's going to be interesting how they end up tying all this stuff up. So we end up at the original series when they're done with this.
Oh, and some other, now that we're talking about stuff that we were going to try to look into for this episode, we were talking about the badges and about the pips on it. And now I fixed my streaming issue. So now I can watch in high quality, and the pips on the badges actually do correlate with the TNG era ranking system. And we were also wondering why some of the shoulders had 5 stripes and some of them had 4, and whether that was a ranking thing of the colored stripes. And that literally comes down to male and females. Females have 4 stripes and males have 5.
Yeah, I don't think it was as easy to see the pips in the first 2 episodes. But yeah, I was noticing the pips more clearly in these last 4.
And more something that I was curious about, I was looking into why some of the uniforms had black stripes on them. And I thought that might have been a Section 31 thing. But when I was reading Desperate Hours, the first Discovery tie-in book, they actually talk about how their away suits all have black trim on them instead. So that's actually like a away mission tactical suit, basically. And kind of moving into more stuff that they discussed in Desperate Hours, they said that the velour-style uniforms that you see in the cage and even in the original series, those uniforms do exist in this universe, but they're at the time when the book was written that they were exclusive to Constitution-class ships. They're the only ones who are getting these new uniforms. And Spock also makes a reference that the reason why ships look so different, what we're seeing in Discovery now opposed to what we'll see in 10 years in the original series, is because humans have overhauling their designs every 10 years or something like that. It's like a quirk that Spock kind of noticed, that every 10 years the humans seem to just kind of completely change the designs of their ships. And they also address the fact that why the captains in this show seem to have ready rooms but the Constitution class didn't. It's a new thing that they were trying about, I guess it had been 6 years ago from the premiere of the show, because the book is set 1 year after The Cage, but 1 year before the premiere of the show, of the Vulcan Hello. And the captain was talking about how the ready rooms are a new thing that they're putting into ships so that the captains have a place to do paperwork so they don't have to go back to their cabin. And then they flip over to Pike, who laments about how he wished they had put a ready room in his ship so he doesn't have to walk all the way to his quarters to take priority messages.
But wasn't the Shinzo like a really old ship and it has a ready room?
Yes, and it sounded like that was something they added. They don't come out and say it, but it's implied that they were adding them to ship.
Oh, okay, so it was a modification. I see, it makes sense.
So instead of getting brand new transporters, the Shinzo got a captain's office.
Basically.
Priorities, man, priorities.
Man, they must have hated her.
You know what? Do you guys work for the government?
Not anymore.
So then you know, they do really dumb stuff like that. You would sit back and you go, well, why wouldn't they upgrade the teleporters? No, their captains need an office, so we'll make it for them first.
Yeah, where I used to work for the city, we had our computers on one desk and our telephones all the way diagonally across the room so that one would not be able to be reached from the other.
We've had parking lots pulled up and laid down so many times because of the way they were in contracts is just silly.
They didn't plant trees in the meantime so they could tear down the forest to put up a parking lot.
Just weird stuff. Like they paved a parking lot just so that the next week they could tear it up to put in a building.
But getting back to the ships, have you guys seen anything about people talking about what they liked or didn't like about the fact that the saucer section on the Discovery spins?
I haven't really seen it, people complaining about it.
There was a proposal about 10 years ago on a website called buildtheenterprise.com where somebody was trying to crowdsource building a spaceship that would go from one end of the solar system to the other, shaped like the Enterprise, and they were going to generate their artificial gravity by spinning the saucer section.
Nice. So kind of like what they had in Space Odyssey.
Yeah, because, you know, you've got to spin it somehow to get artificial gravity today.
And that's why people are complaining about the saucer?
A few weeks ago, I'd seen something on the internet complaining about that. But then face it, it's on the internet. They're going to complain about everything.
You can find someone complaining about anything on the internet. Yeah, it's crazy. They complain. Now, what do you think of the Klingon ships, though? The D7 that we've seen and the little bird of, or little shuttle things.
Those peacock shuttle things are pretty cool, but did we get a good shot of D7? I don't remember seeing it.
We've gotten a shot of the D7. We've gotten a good shot of the D7s. It's the bird of prey's that have been too fast to get a really good look at.
See, I thought with the D7, we only get like that belly shot kind of thing, looking straight up while it sucks in the shuttle pod. We didn't actually see the whole ship from a distance.
What little I remember seeing it surprisingly looks like a D7. I expected them to just completely overhaul and not recognize it.
Yeah, it had those like flat-looking nacelle things underneath it and some kind of blob on the front.
Yeah, and you could see the neck. It looked a lot more like a D7 than I expected it to. But then again, there's something to the right that I couldn't make out, so it could be completely different anyways.
But speaking of those shuttles that we saw when Captain escapes, that's like one of the first times we've actually seen fighter craft in the Star Trek universe. It's almost always just been capital ships.
We see a lot with the Maquis. They fly a lot of those smaller ships, and we see a lot of stuff in Deep Space Nine with runabouts and things. But you're right. It's mainly capital ships and larger. But those little shuttle things, tack craft, whatever they are kind of weird because they have that big open glass looking front thing and then the weird fins on the back. I'm not quite sure how they're propelled.
Yeah, I didn't notice any propulsion system, but having that kind of a view system allows you to see better, too. I mean, let's face it, the original shuttles that you saw in the original series just had a flat screen in front of them. You had no idea what was going on the sides of you or above you.
That's what the computer readouts are for, because they're scanners and all that kind of stuff. It's those kind of things, I imagine, that the shuttlecrafts and shuttle pods made by the Federation are much more fly-by-wire type things, where they just program in where they wanted to go. And you're not actually manually flying it like a fighter craft.
What few pictures of the bird of prey from Discovery that I can find, they look a lot like a eel with its fins swooping down.
Okay, do you guys think that the Federation is going to allow other humans to take the eugenics modifications that the engineer did to build more of the ships?
Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think they'll go for the whole injecting yourself with tardigrade or spore DNA.
Which might be part of the issue why the spore drive never catches on.
I was kind of surprised that the Admiral didn't come aboard and arrest him, because she referred to it as eugenics, and those are illegal.
Yeah, that's fair. They also talked about how that would be the equivalent of it in the episode where he actually injects himself. Didn't they make a comment about that's what they're basically doing?
I'm pretty sure she made the comment when she was talking to the captain.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I think they made the comment in both episodes.
And are we seeing a George R.R. Martin trend here in Discovery? You get to like a character and they're going to kill it off?
You mean like Tasha, where we liked a character and then they killed her off?
Well, they killed off the chief of security.
Right, because they killed off the chief of security in the first few episodes. That seems like a common thread now, right? Voyager, the chief of security. Well, I guess that was Tuvok, but prior to that, I guess there was one on Voyager who didn't make it.
Half of Voyager's crew didn't make it.
Well, that too, but still.
Half.
That means he had a 50-50 chance.
I don't think they're going to just kill off random people or kill off people through the... I think if they kill off people, it's going to be for a very specific thing. Like, they, you know, the chief of security, that was a silly thing to do. You don't go and attack a big giant monster.
Oh, I agree with you. I just... With Game of Thrones, it gets to be old hat that as soon as you start liking somebody, boom, they're offed.
Maybe that's why I don't like that show. Well, there's a bunch of reasons I don't like that show. But we digress. So, what do you guys think about the lieutenant... What's his face? The new Lieutenant Ash is actually Volk in disguise.
I was just about to ask about that. I think it would be interesting if he was, because that could bridge the gap with the Smoothhead Klingons.
Well, I'm wondering if they did like an Arn Darvin kind of thing on him and did the whole switcheroo and made him a Klingon. And then at some point, he's going to walk into the ready room and the Tribble's going to go off. And nobody there is going to know why the Tribble is going off. But we're all going to know. And then he's going to leave and we're going to be like, oh.
Yeah, I've been wondering that myself too, because of all the casting thing. I think it would be cool if it turned out he was undercover, but it kind of makes me wonder, well, why would he bother?
Because he's trying to get onto the ship or he's trying to get information from Lorca. My thing is, like, Laurel's told him that in order for him to succeed, he's going to have to give up everything he knows about being Klingon or something. It's something like that. And then he disappears. And then a couple episodes later, she shows up and there's a guy in the brig that says, for the last 6 months, since the Battle of Binary Stars, I've been hanging out with Laurel. Well, we know that's not the case because she's been hanging out on that ship for time. So there's something fishy going on there.
There definitely is.
Well, he's around for a long time on the series, so they can work that thread however they want.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing with, like, the actor who plays Volk on IMDb. The only thing he's ever played is Volk, and the only pictures of him on there is him as Volk.
Yeah, somebody started a Twitter account where it's just they're pasting pictures of Volk's head onto people's bodies at red carpet events. It's pretty funny.
That's funny. I'm going to have to look at that up.
I forget the name of the guy, but the Keg Podcast Twitter feed is following it if you want. So it should be in there. Which, if you want to follow us, go find us at Keg Podcast, which will also work on Imgur and Instagram.
Imgur what?
Imgur and Instagram. The Keg Podcast.
Those are two websites. You can also follow the Klingon Assault Group on Facebook. We have a Facebook page, and we have keg.org is our regular Twitter handle.
Or you can email us at podcast@keg.org.
We'll just get our entire fill of bumpers in.
Might as well, then we don't have to do it at the end.
And if you're not up to anything next month around Thanksgiving, you should come to Starbase Indy, where the Klingon Assault Group and the Klingon Language Institute are going to be having a fun time.
And we'll be recording various people for our Klingon podcast.
Apparently at the con in town on the weekend, a couple of people have randomly are setting up a table, and I just found out about like 2 days ago.
Oh, a CAG table?
Yeah, they're not even from town.
Oh, wow. They're coming from out of town to do that? That's pretty cool. Where are they coming from?
I've seen them at the Fan Expo, so I'm guessing they're from the Toronto area.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I had to try to get down there and do an interview with them. I'm working evening shift, so I have to get going first thing in the morning. Good times. I'm honestly surprised they would even bother. It is not really a big event for anybody to show up to.
But a lot of times the smaller cons, if they're close by and you don't have to go a long ways to get to them, it gives you more freedom to do things.
That's true. So what do you think about Robert April being in continuity? Is it Robert April?
Yeah, Robert April was the captain of the Enterprise before Christopher Pike.
The only other time he would have been mentioned is in the animated series.
Well, remember, yes. We also had Commodore Decker and one other one. I can't remember who offhand right now.
Oh, on that list that was shown on Discovery?
Yeah.
It also has an Archer on that list.
Yeah, there was Jonathan Archer, but there were three Enterprise ones, Matthew Decker, and I believe there was one other.
I know Pike was on the list. Oh, what do you guys think about there being a holodeck?
Oh, I love their holo technology. That was pretty sweet.
Another thing that would have first appeared in TSA was, I forget what they call it. They call it like a holographic recreation room or something like that.
In what? Sorry, I missed that.
The animated series. It would have been the first time we saw like a holodeck. And they primarily seemed to use it for training.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. Because I think the first time we see holo technology is that one race in Enterprise. So I wouldn't be surprised if they at some point shared their technology with Federation Starfleet.
Well, they seemed like they were all right with sharing it with people because they basically gave it to the Klingons just so they wouldn't kill them.
Well, that's not really sharing. You know, if the choice is give it to us or die.
That's what it is.
And any new technology like that in wartime is probably going to be used for training first.
And since we're talking about that scene anyways, what do you guys think of the rifles? It does remind me of that rifle Kirk had in Where No Man Has Gone Before, or the Man Trap. The one with like the radar dish on it. If you took the radar dish off and the handle on the back and just painted it black, it would have looked a lot like that.
I thought they also looked kind of like the weapons the Makos had in Enterprise.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if that's what was their inspiration, was mashing up those two weapons.
That could easily be, especially if we're thinking that the fact that the uniforms are blue today corresponds to the fact that they were blue jumpsuits in Enterprise.
Yeah, when they left the holodeck and they were walking down the corridor with those jumpsuits, they were basically wearing what looked like Enterprise jumpsuits with the little armor things over the top.
Yeah, the vest things, which they do look a lot like what they had in the movies.
What did you guys think of the scene where they show the uniforms being put together, formed, created, molecule by molecule?
That was awesome.
Yeah, that was really cool looking. That was a good bit of CGI.
Now that Michael Burnham has a post on the bridge, do you think she's going to get like a field commission?
That's going to be real tough for the captain to pull off, because apparently he's already under massive heat with Star Trek with Federation for not sending her back off to prison.
I kind of figured that was coming, but I am a little surprised how fast it happened. But a lot of the stuff usually happens on the bridge. So I guess it kind of makes sense that I want to try to keep her where the action is.
Or more likely, keep her around so the captain can get to her information and her head as fast as possible.
That too. I guess since we're talking about everything from 3 to 6. So in episode 3, when they bring her into like that engineering room and they give her a line of code, but they won't tell her what it is, but she has to troubleshoot it. Is it just me, or does it seem kind of ridiculous that she's going to troubleshoot coding that she doesn't even know what it's for?
It depends on what kind of bug is in it. If it's some kind of bug that's just preventing it from compiling, then no, you can debug code without knowing the specific task it's doing, because you're just making sure the syntax is right. However, I have tons of problems with that scene in general, because the code that they give her is just Windows 32 code that's being run through a decompiler.
That's awesome.
At one point, you can see the name of the dynamic link library that they just ran through a decompiler to get the chunk of code, and it's like NT something. I'm just like, whoa, that's a piece of Windows code.
Well, if they could write code that actually would look good for this era that they're in, they could build the bloody starships and we could get off this rock.
Right. I imagine at that point in the future that humans will not directly write code. We'll have artificial intelligences that will write the code. We'll just tell the artificial intelligence what we want the code to do in a more abstract way, and it'll do it. We already have pretty high-level programming languages, and I assume at that point it'll be even higher level.
I remember when I was taking computer programming, that's what they were shooting for.
Right. You've got to have... Writing code by hand would just be A, very inefficient, and B, prone to bugs. And you can't have bugs in a starship. That's not good. You know, oh no, the main computer just crashed. We're just going to sit here and float in space for months while we tried to fix it. We can't fix it because we have no power, because the power control system was part of the main control. There's too many, you know, you don't want a blue screen while you're in the middle of a space battle.
I also hate to say it, but if you follow Moore's law out to where they're at, your computer code is going to have a Google or Avogadro's number of lines just to do something.
So what we're getting at here is Windows will probably be obsolete by the 24th century.
Right. They're not going to be using Windows to run their starships.
No, they probably still will be. And they'll have to get a patch every night.
What do you think of the special effects when it jumps, the Discovery?
I'm a little bit... I really don't know. It's, why do you need the ship to spin? That's never really been explained. If it's jumping from one point to another, wouldn't it just pop away and pop there?
It always, to me, it looks like it's folding and then like, I don't know, I like it. I like the way it looks. I don't need an explanation for why it looks the way it does.
I like it too. I like it how it looks like it's spinning around and then kind of folds in on itself and then it's gone. I think that looks really cool. Because the only other thing they could do is just the ship disappears and somewhere else while it They do that in other shows, like the new Battlestar Galactica, their FTL, that's all they do, is they just disappear from one point and appear in another. So I think it's cool that they have a little effect before he jumps away so that you know that's what it is. So I guess it gives them also a leeway in the future that if it doesn't do that, yet they jump, then you know something's wrong.
Yeah, if it jumps in a weird way or they change the animation in some way, they can shift it and go, oh, something weird happened. That was a misjump. If it just disappeared and then reappeared, it would be like, bink, bink, oh. I can do that with my camera right now.
What do you guys think of the fact that they actually have mess halls on this ship? And let's throw the other thing out there, too, that the computer tells you what to eat.
I think that's funny. And I do like the idea that it has a mess hall because it kind of calls back to Enterprise in the original series where you saw where they eat.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny that the computer tells you the nutritional values of what you're eating. Although it would get rather annoying after a while because you're like, I want some ice cream. This is not good for you. It is full of carbohydrates and sugar. Do not eat this. It will cause you problems.
Chocolate. Give me chocolate.
Right, I can imagine Deanna would not like the computer to tell her off every time she tries to eat some chocolate ice cream.
I'm surprised.
The question is, if that were the case, would Deanna try to psychoanalyze the computer and kind of, oh my God, and think of whose voice was on the computer?
I'm kind of surprised at that point or the Next Generation era that you order whatever you want, but the computer will sequence it so it has whatever nutritional value you want. It's just that the computer makes it taste like what you asked for.
I imagine that's how a replicator works in the future. I think that the replicator that they have in like Discovery in the original series is very simplistic in nature. Like it can't do it quite as well as... Well, especially with food, with clothes and stuff, it seems to be fine. But I imagine with food and stuff, it's not quite as varied as they have in the Next Generation.
Remember, you still had a kitchen in the original series movies.
Yeah, they had a gal, and they in Enterprise, it was all cooked. There was nothing like that. And then Voyager was.
Even in the original series, they do talk about the galley too, because there's the Charlie X. They're talking about Thanksgiving and how Kirk wants the protein that tastes like turkey, and then suddenly turkeys appear in the galley.
Well, in Star Trek VI, they actually showed the galley.
Right, it vaporizes the pot, and all that's left is the content.
Oh, there. Speaking of food, the plate of food that Captain Lorca was eating when the Admiral calls him. I'm not exactly sure if it's a Oriental dish to go with the fortune cookies, or was it a Klingon dish? So where he's trying to understand his enemy.
What episode was that?
It had to have been the butcher's knife, because the Admiral is right after he's pissed off the Vulcan. I'm not exactly sure now. I just know that there was one scene where she does a hologram, comes in his room, and interrupts him eating.
I was seeing if I could get a picture of it, because I don't remember what he was eating.
Yeah, I remember the scene, but I don't remember what he was eating either.
Whatever it was in a bowl, and it had several tentacles coming out of it, and he broke off one of the tentacles and dipped it in a sauce before stuffing it in his mouth.
I'm not sure. That's an interesting idea. Try to learn your own enemy by exploring their culture.
Yeah, know your enemy. I believe that's Sun Tzu.
Here's a question. Why do you think Lorca won't get his eyes fixed? Do you think it's because he just doesn't like doctors, or do you think it's because maybe he's not, maybe there's something up with him?
Oh, it's totally a, you know, choose your pain type thing. He's choosing to punish himself for the loss of his crew. At least that's how I see it.
He did make the comment that he could get them fixed, but then they wouldn't be his eyes.
I was wondering if the issue is that perhaps he doesn't want to get his eyes fixed because he's not actually... There's like a theory floating out there that he's actually Lorca from the Mirror Universe. And I was wondering if maybe he doesn't get his eyes fixed because if he gets his eyes fixed, he has to go through a medical scan. And once he has a medical scan done, they'll know he's not the real Lorca.
But he's had to go through all those tests after the incident on the other ship to be allowed back in the captain's seat, the ones that he, quote, faked the results of.
And there you have it. He faked the results.
So you don't think he's the real Lorca? You think he's a fake Lorca?
If he's from the Mirror Universe, that's a good reason why he wouldn't get his eyes fixed.
He may just not want a transplant. I'm sure there would have been a technique for Kirk to desensitize him to Red Knox
five.
Whatever that thing, yeah, that he's allergic to, and get his eyes fixed instead of having to wear glasses.
However, him being sensitive to light, I wonder if that was kind of like an offhanded joke about how everything on the ship's so dark right now.
Yeah, I've heard people say that that was an excuse for them to make it a darker Star Trek.
And so the Klingon ships are now brighter than what they were in any of the other series?
Well, they were bright in the original series, what we saw of them. They were only dark. See, I think that they got dark because of Star Trek III copying that submarine Hunt for Red October type thing. And so then a lot of the Klingon ships carried that on, that, oh, we're dark because we're like a submarine and we're, you know, you got to have the lights off when you use the cloaking device kind of thing.
Well, for my own personal preference, I'm glad they're light again and we can see what's inside them.
Me too. I think it makes a lot more sense. It doesn't make any sense to make it really dark in your ship because you're just going to bump into stuff.
Less Klingons can see in the dark.
And therefore, that's why the captain doesn't want to get his eyes fixed. He wants to experience the world's view the way Klingons do.
Hey, Rotek, you got any questions? I know you can't speak, but you could type. Or suggestions or any comments. He's probably idle, though. Oh, no, he's typing.
So what do you guys think of Tilly?
Oh, Tilly and her bad word. I like the character. I like all the characters, though, so.
I thought that scene was awesome.
I thought it was, too.
I'm wondering if there's some place that we can, if we've seen her somewhere in command in one of the later, in one of the earlier episodes, later from when the timeline of the series, but earlier from obviously when they were recorded.
No, they're probably going to Game of Thrones her.
But they've already got a Pike.
Really? You think they're going to kill her?
At this point, I wouldn't put it past them. They'll make her, everybody will be like, she's the greatest character, and then they'll kill her off, and everyone will just be like, no!
I don't know about that. If they were going to kill her, I would say it would be like the end of a season.
It'll be closer to the end of the story. When you're really attached to the character, then they'll just be like, stab.
Now, there's an interesting concept for you, because this series was pitched as they're going to do a single story arc, single story for the whole season. And now Discovery has been picked up for a second season. So are we likely to see the same storyline continue through two seasons, or are we going to see a different story arc for season two?
I think it's second one because they had a panel with one of the writers that I was watching. And one of the questions was, what was one of the hardest things about writing? And one of them accidentally said, wrapping up the Klingon War.
But they may have been talking about season two at that time.
Well, that's fair. It hadn't been announced. This was back when they were doing like all those just before the show came out. They were doing a bunch of panels at different cons. And as soon as he said it, you saw the look in his eye that he shouldn't have said anything at all.
Well, I know a lot of actors, not necessarily Discovery actors, but a lot of actors saying they're liking this new idea of not a full number of network episodes, but that the story will go for 13 to 15 episodes, and then the story will conclude, you know, for a season, or then move on to the next season.
That's one of the interesting things about not Star Trek related, but Gotham. I find that they break their seasons up into two parts, where there might be like an overarching story that goes out through the whole season, but they like tell a story in the first half and the second half, because 20 episodes, like going to season three of Enterprise, like that was a lot of episodes focused on them just going after the Zindi.
Wasn't it like two seasons?
The Zindi? No, that was one season.
Oh, okay. But it kind of began at the end of a season, right? And then was a whole season long.
Yeah, the last episode.
The last episode of the second season is where they destroyed Florida and introduced it. And then it was all of season three that was a Zindi season.
Yep. But season two was all temporal Cold War stuff. And then season three segued into the Zindi part of the temporal Cold War stuff.
Those factions controlling the Zindi and the factions controlling the Suliban, I don't think they were necessarily the same ones, because it was the guy controlling the Suliban who sent them after the people controlling the Zindi.
So speaking about the format, a friend of mine was talking to me about it.
In order to get the sequence of the story that you're looking for.
Right. It's not so much that it's an extended storyline. It's the fear was that, like, remember how some of those episodes of TNG, like Parallels, for example, it would be all of this build up, and then Worf has to go here and it's fixed kind of thing. Is it going to be like that, where they're going to drop all these hints like scars and guns in pockets and what is going on here and the mirror thing, but they're not actually going to explain that until episodes, you know, 12, 13 at the end, and the whole season is just going to be us going, oh, what is that? I know from what you said, Javon, that I agree with you. I think they're going to do like little mini story arcs, like the tardigrade arc is like, there's the story arc there. Now we're going into, you know, the being captured by Klingons arc. What's going to happen next? Can't be as bad as Lost. Yeah, maybe. Could it? Is that how they're going to do it? Is it going to be like Lost and what was the other one? The other J.J. Abrams?
Heroes.
No, not Heroes. The one...
With Discovery, I do kind of think that if they introduce an idea that they don't really follow up, like taking, for example, Takuma, that they introduce him for two episodes just to kill him off, I think that's what the intention of, now they have somebody that they can write about in their extended universe, the books and the comics, because the beginning of Star Trek Discovery comic book series is supposed to be a six-parter delving into the history of Takuma.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to come out. I already have it on pre-order.
I was supposed to come out yesterday and didn't come out, and I went to check the website. It's been pushed back till some unspecified time in November.
Oh, boo.
I went to the comic book shop today and asked the guy about it, and he goes, yeah, he's like, I was looking for it today because it was supposed to come in.
Yeah, the guy my local comic book store is really good. They hold like anything Star Trek that comes in, they know that I'll probably want a first crack at it. So I'll like come in there and they'll be like, we've got this Star Trek stuff. Would you like any of it? Oh, I'll take this then.
Yeah, they do that with me with Power Rangers. However, I should start reading the IDW franchise. I was looking through their archives and I was surprised how much they actually had.
There's a lot of Star Trek comic books out there. There's Humble Bundle did a thing a few years back where I got like PDFs and EPUBs of like 50 Star Trek comic books. Like it was crazy.
Yeah, somebody from work gave me a flash drive with a bunch of Star Trek and Star Wars comics on it. I got to sit down one day and just start reading them.
There's a few good Klingon ones out there, if you can find them. Blood Will Tell, then there's Manifest Destiny for the new movie.
Well, if we ever run out of books for the book review show, I guess we can start doing comics instead.
Should we do a plug for the book review show? Is that going to come out soon?
Yeah, we're recording it tomorrow. I know. That doesn't really mean much to anybody who's listening to this, so we'll probably delete them.
Yeah, it's only an opening.
That's what I'm saying. Do you want to make a plug for it and say, hey, you know, hey, folks, coming soon, the CAG podcast will have its own book review called Bound by Honor. Check it out.
Oh, that's kind of what tomorrow's episode is supposed to be. But anybody who's listening to this, look out for our next episode, which is going to be the introductory episode of Bound by Honor, where we are going to be reviewing books. And the introductory episode, we're going to introduce the concept, how we're going to do it, and announce the very first book. That's it.
Plugs off phone.
And that'll be another one that I'm looking for feedback on, any of the social media ones. Keg podcast accounts on any social media stuff, I try to post something when we go to record, with kind of the hope that people will respond back to me personally.
I'm trying to think if there's anything in these four episodes that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, I think as far as a broad overview, we've pretty much got it. Like when I saw Vulcan uniform, I was wondering, for some bizarre reason, I was always under the impression that Spock was the first Vulcan Starfleet, but I don't know where I got that from. And I was trying to backtrack that to see where I got that from. And the best I could ever figure out is that StarTrek.com had that printed in his character profile for the longest time.
Because even in the original series, they talked about the fact that there was a starship, Federation starship, that was entirely banned by Vulcans.
Yeah, and that was the thing that the article I was, the stuff that I read, that even though that's what StarTrek.com said, it's immediately contradicted by the Intrepid. Yeah, thank you. The Intrepid had all the Vulcans.
And let's face it, the first officer on a Starfleet ship was a Vulcan.
Yeah, T'Pol was the first Vulcan in Starfleet, because after she gets shamed by the Vulcans, she quits and
Vulcan High Council.
Yeah, she gets shamed by the Vulcan High Council. She quits and joins Starfleet.
Yeah, she gets her commission at the beginning of season four, I think.
It was interesting that the whole Sarek having to choose between Michael and Spock, and choosing Spock, and then Spock being the one who chooses to go the other way and join Starfleet, and he made the bad choice.
I thought that was pretty cool because now it adds like a new dynamic to the feud or the disconnection that the Spock and Sarek had to with each other. And it keeps in line with what was happening in the Kelvinverse.
Right. It totally explains why Sarek gave Spock the cold shoulder when they come when he comes on the Enterprise. It's like, hey, there's this guy that totally betrayed what I wanted him to do. But it also shows that Sarek hadn't learned from the experience with Michael and should have learned.
And unfortunately, from a human perspective, the whole decision and aftermath is almost stereotypical. It's a lot of it just happens. The father will choose his own child or his eldest son, and the eldest son usually will rebel and do whatever they want.
Yeah, and Michael even pointed that out, that he was given an impossible choice to make, and she almost didn't seem surprised that he would have chose Spock.
It was a very human thing to do, to choose Spock. The logical thing to do would be to choose the person who's right then and there, who could do it, you know, who could take the role, instead of waiting for a hypothetical unknown in the future.
Yeah, and I have to keep in mind that while they're writing about Vulcans, the writers are human.
Right, but I think it goes to show that Sarek had, through his contact with humans, picked up more of their traits than he would be willing to admit. And I think, like, Spock was a reminder of that. Michael was a reminder of that. And when the Vulcan that he was talking to kind of digged at him and was like, you're becoming human, and I don't think that's appropriate, kind of thing. And there's also a lot of racism on Vulcan.
But by the same token, by having gone through all those experiences,
talked about before, and none of them seem to ever acknowledge that Cybok is also kicking around, and they're not talking about, nobody's talking about Cybok in this series, and he's supposed to be out there somewheres.
Nobody talks about Star Trek 5. Come on.
And it, to the point where even when the committee's talking about his kids, he doesn't even mention the fact that Sarek did have a full-blooded Vulcan kid.
Right. I think that's probably, they didn't mention it. I listened very carefully the last time I watched it, and he was very careful the way he worded it to say that there would be two not quite Vulcan, but he didn't really imply that if Sarek had any, you know, full-blooded kids, then it would be an issue for them to join.
Now, he had Cybok with a princess. Do we know who Cybok? And Cybok said that he was raised with Spock, so he should be around right now. Or would he have left that by this time?
Well, I don't know. I don't know the age difference. We'd have to do a lot of research, probably.
I'll have to watch Star Trek 5 before the next episode.
I'm sorry.
It's my own fault.
It's not a bad movie. It's really not that bad. The Klingon in it is really good. The sets and the acting is pretty good. Yeah, the story is a little goofy there at the end, but it's not worse than, you know, a giant cone eating planets.
Five isn't even my least favorite, to be fair.
There's some of those next gen movies that are kind of...
Yeah, I'd actually say Nemesis is probably my rock bottom.
Yeah, that movie was pretty bad. Generations is kind of meh, but Star Trek 5's not. It kind of bridges well to 6 as well.
Here's a question, though, for you, because the engineer who is tripping by this time mentioned it. Are we going to see more of
Katras
being used in Discovery, even though nobody knew what the heck McCoy and Kirk were talking about in Search for Spock when McCoy started going on about Spock's Katra?
I think it's going to only play as much of a role as it does already. Just Michael and Sarek seem to have some sort of psychic link that keeps them linked together, which means we'll probably see Sarek for the rest of the series as long as Michael's on. And I don't think Michael's going to go anywhere from the series anytime soon, since she's the main character.
But you had the engineer going, wow, the Galactic Superhighway, or something to that effect.
Yeah, he was definitely enjoying himself on those mushrooms. Anybody got any final thoughts?
I like it so far. I personally enjoy the nods to other shows and like the nods to Pike and Archer and having Mudd on there and Sarek. I think it's cool because it makes it feel like it's actually a part of the Prime timeline, which a lot of people are doubting right now. I really do think that by the end of it, there is going to be an explanation why right now. I have a feeling, kind of touched on it early, that does have something to do with these spores and how they're affecting the engineer.
They are explaining more and more and tying it in a little tighter as we go on through the series. So it will be interesting to see as we keep going. I mean, the show seems to me to be getting better and better.
I agree. I'm very much enjoying it. And Rotek agrees too.
And that's all we really needed.
So stay tuned. Next time we'll be bringing you our opinions of more of this new Star Trek.
Klingon Mach Tachjad.